This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Women who've been pregnant already know. When you first walk into that doctor's office, you are offered a lot of tests.
Blood tests, blood sugar tests, ultrasounds, and genetic tests. But the most common of those genetic tests is the amniocentesis. It's only offered later in pregnancy and has the risk of miscarriage.
Which is why, at this point in time, only 2% of pregnant women choose to have an amniocentesis or any other form of invasive genetic testing. Most often, they do it because they want to know whether or not their babies have Down syndrome.
All that could change, though. This month, researchers publishing in the British Medical Journal announced the development of a simple early pregnancy blood test that can detect Down syndrome with almost 100% accuracy.
The test isn't yet available to the public, but the prospect of such early comprehensive genetic testing conjures up thoughts of a brave new world filled with complicated new questions about informed consent, abortion, disability rights, and eugenics. To help us answer some of those questions, we're joined in the studio now by Dr. Brian Scottco. He's a clinical genetics fellow at the Down Syndrome Program at Children's Hospital in Boston. Dr. Scottco, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
So tell us a little bit about what women's current options are for Down syndrome testing. As we mentioned, it's the amniocentesis. And why is it that only so few women actually get that test?
That's right. If a pregnant woman wants to know definitively if her fetus has Down syndrome, she has one of two options: an amniocentesis performed in the first trimester, second trimester, or chorionic villus sampling performed in the first trimester. Both are invasive tests, so by nature of the needle being inserted, could carry a risk of miscarriage. But what this new landmark study proves is that the nitty-gritty science validates that a test coming out soon through a simple blood test, no risk to the fetus whatsoever, might be able one day to give the same answer.
Okay, so currently amniocentesis is done also later in pregnancy, after the first trimester, typically the fourth or fifth month?
That's right. So amniocentesis usually after about the 15th week of gestation.
Okay, so that means that women or families who then, say, get a positive test result for Down syndrome, they're in the second trimester of pregnancy when they have to make the decision on what to do next.
That's right.
Whereas for this new blood test, it could be given in the very earliest parts of pregnancy?
What the research is demonstrating is as early as the first trimester, women might be able to get a blood test which will say definitively, yes or no, am I carrying a pregnancy with Down syndrome? And so they might be able one day to make a decision about their pregnancy without maybe even their partner knowing, their husband knowing, or their coworkers knowing that they're pregnant.
Hmm. So I understand, and you've written about this as well, that at this point in time, even with amniocentesis, that worldwide some 92% of women who have tested positive for a fetus with Down syndrome choose to have that fetus terminated. Is that correct?
That's correct. The latest studies that have been done, a bit dated, so about 10 years ago, shows that internationally and in some places locally, 80 to 90% of women will choose to terminate a pregnancy if they get the definitive diagnosis through amnio or CVS.
Okay, so is your concern that number, that 92%, might actually go higher, or do you have even further concerns about this new blood test?
So as you mentioned, only about 2% of women are choosing amnio or CVS and finding out prenatally. But if we have this new non-invasive blood test comes out and all pregnant women choose to get that test, then a vast majority, if not all of pregnant women, will learn prenatally. So the open question then becomes this: will babies with Down syndrome start to disappear over time?
It's an incredibly provocative question. And actually, let me ask you one more quick thing about this blood test in particular. So we're talking about Down syndrome, but I understand that that is just one genetic complication of many that this blood test could potentially detect. Is that correct?
That's correct. Down syndrome is going to be the first, if you will, to have a non-invasive blood test, but it'll be a blood test that could detect Pataugh syndrome, or three copies of the 13th chromosome, Edwards syndrome. But it even opens up greater questions. What about if we're able to test for breast cancer genes or adult onset conditions? Or what if we're able to learn that some genes are associated with sexual orientation? What information, if any, should parents be allowed to know prenatally to make very important decisions for them based on?
It does sound like science fiction is fast becoming science fact when it comes to prenatal care. But to be clear, this blood test for Down syndrome is not yet available in doctors' offices.
That's correct. This non-invasive blood test, companies are saying maybe as soon as next year might be out.
As soon as that. Wow. So, listeners, If this indeed comes to pass as soon as next year's, would you take this blood test for Down syndrome? And if you tested positive, would knowing about Down syndrome earlier in pregnancy change what you might do next? And do pregnant women and families even have the proper support and education to know what to do now? Does this sound like a big breakthrough in prenatal testing to you, or the first step down the road to eugenics? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'd like to introduce a couple more guests into this conversation. First, we're also joined in the studio by Maureen Gallagher. She's executive director of the Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress. Maureen Gallagher, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Wendy Mariner. She's a professor of health law at the Boston University School of Public Health. Professor Mariner, welcome to Radio Boston to you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So, Maureen Gallagher, let me start with you. This test, this blood test for early pregnancy blood test for Down syndrome, could be in doctor's offices as soon as next year. I didn't realize it would be that soon. What are your primary concerns about it?
Well, we're concerned that families who are making these decisions have access to up-to-date, accurate information about Down syndrome. We're not a pro-life organization or a pro-choice organization. We're a pro-information organization. And what we have found in recent years that even today, that medical providers often don't have access to the most up-to-date information. And we feel that when families are making these decisions, that they really need balanced information that portrays realistically what life is like living with Down syndrome.
I've read reports, Dr. Scott Coe wrote about this as well, that some half of obstetrics fellows say that they receive barely, if any at all, information on how to present, how to deal with patients who have diagnosis of Down syndrome or other intellectual disabilities in their unborn children.
Yes, well, we have a new program called the First Call Program, and we help families after they first get the diagnosis of Down syndrome prenatally or postnatally. And right now, about 15% of the families that we're supporting are in the prenatal stage, and we have trained families who are there to support them in whatever decision they make, but want to make sure that they have the accurate information available to them.
Do you think that this test would make it even more difficult to get that accurate information to people, maybe in Boston? Maybe it's a little easier because we have so many medical professionals around and so many specialists, but elsewhere in the country where maybe medical care isn't as comprehensive as it is here, that it would become even harder to get that information sooner to patients if they're getting tested in the first month of pregnancy?
Yes, we are concerned that people may be making decisions very quickly. So on a national and a local level, we need information that medical providers can be giving out to new families. There's a new prenatal booklet that is just coming out. It's a revised version of the book called Understanding a Down Syndrome Diagnosis. And there's an organization called Lettercase that has created this booklet. And it's been approved by not only the medical community, but also the Down syndrome community. And our goal is to be able to get that information out to folks so that when they have this diagnosis, they can make a decision based on this information.
Professor Wendy Mariner at the Boston University School of Public Health, what's your first reaction? I mean, it just seems to me that we've always been talking about a brave new world of early genetic testing in fetuses, and suddenly it's right here at our doorstep.
Well, I think that's quite correct. It's almost impossible to stop the spread of new technology in this country. So we need to make sure that the test is accurate and it can be properly used. Ms. Gallagher makes an excellent point that this is possible in early pregnancy when a woman is probably just learned she's pregnant and may make a decision quickly before anyone else knows she's pregnant. And that could be an advantage from the woman's point of view, but it's a very big decision.
Do you feel as if that now many more women, it's hard to say, but would be faced with this question of whether or not to terminate earlier, and do we even have the supports for them available to make that decision so soon?
Well, she also makes a point that physicians may not be well prepared for this. They have little time to discuss this kind of information with patients. They're certainly not paid well for discussing the details with patients. And I think it makes it more difficult. And many women may not visit a physician that early in pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a lot of callers who want to join us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking about a potential new blood test that could detect Down syndrome in fetuses as early as the first trimester of pregnancy and whether or not you would choose to have that test. Holly is calling from Worcester. Welcome to Radio Boston, Holly.
Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome. What's your thought?
I just wanted to say I had my my first baby 2 years ago, and we have a person in my family, my aunt, actually, who has Downs, and she's lived well into her 40s. Definitely was not projected to live this long, and I think that it's important to say that, you know, those families that do have people in their family that have Downs and just absolutely love them, that wouldn't, a lot of them wouldn't choose to but any other way. We chose not to have the test for our because of our family history, and we said that it wasn't important to us. Although I do know, you know, there are a lot of health risks associated with Downs, life expectancy, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But just wanted to say that, you know, we felt that it wasn't important at the time.
Holly, thank you so much for your call. Your cell phone's kind of dropping in and out with us, but thank you for calling. Dr. Scott Coe, Holly's story must be a familiar one, where it seems like patients who have experience, firsthand experience, with family members or friends who have Down syndrome, that for them it's something manageable. But for those people who have no experience with it whatsoever, what position does this put them in, being able to find out even earlier whether or not their fetus has it?
Well, Holly raises an excellent point. It's really the responsibility of medical providers to make sure, regardless of your background, you really understand what it's like to have Down syndrome today, in today's time. And I often say, let's take a look at the research. So research demonstrates that those families who have individuals with Down syndrome are less likely to get divorced in comparison to families who don't have a child with Down syndrome. Research has shown that brothers and sisters who have a sibling with Down syndrome are more likely to be rated as empathetic, kind, and caring. And when you interview people with Down syndrome themselves in the research literature, they tell a consistent message that they feel their lives are valuable.
Professor Mariner, is there a question here also of access and equity? That's always an issue when it comes to the medical field and medical advancements. I mean, is this a test that could be or should be offered to everybody?
Well, it could be, and in fact, there's not likely to be a lot of support for government prohibitions on tests, but that means their only real break on dissemination of the test is price. We tend to avoid open discussions of difficult or controversial ethical questions by talking about payment. So we ask who should pay, and where the service is controversial, sometimes government won't pay for a particular procedure. But that hides a real inequity. People who can afford to pay for the test will get it, and those who cannot afford it will not. Does treat people a bit unequally rather than a fairer system that would spread the cost of caring for all our children across the entire population.
Let's get another call in here. Matt is calling from Lowell. Welcome to Radio Boston, Matt.
Yeah, hi. I have more of a comment about the wider implications of personal choice, how it can impact the greater good. Is that it, you know, a family with someone with Down syndrome, as these tests, you know, become more widely used and the number of Down syndrome cases maybe drops, you may see funding and supports for Down syndrome services and, you know, supports just drop off the map in terms of cuts in funding, kind of going back to your equity and eligibility thing.
Mm-hmm. Matt, thank you so much for your call. Maureen Gallagher of the Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress, is this something that you're concerned of, that just if the community itself, the size of the community shrinks, so will the supports that you already have?
Well, we are an organization that works with two national organizations to ensure that that does not happen, but of course it is a concern. We are going to Washington, D.C. next week for the Buddy Walk on Washington with over 200 leaders from the Down syndrome community to advocate for resources, research, and other things to help people with Down syndrome, because right now, honestly, there are other conditions that there are a lot more funding for. So, yes, it is a concern, although there are so many families. There are 5,000 individuals with Down syndrome living in Massachusetts. So, and the life expectancy has changed dramatically to 60 years of age and beyond. So We feel that there is still a very strong movement and in the direction of supporting not only people with Down syndrome, but people with other intellectual disabilities as well.
Let's take another call. Shira's calling from Cambridge. Welcome to Radio Boston, Shira.
Yes, thank you. So my comment is that I'm 9.5 weeks pregnant, and I was just offered a test for, I guess, early screening for Down syndrome and spina bifida, and I declined the test because my feeling is, and what people aren't saying, is that if you find out that this is the case, it's really about the real option is, are you going to terminate the pregnancy or not? And this is what people aren't talking about. If I need to get myself educated, if I have a Down syndrome child, I can get myself educated about it pretty quickly. And I'm just really opposed to this early screening, or at least call it what it is, which is early screening for the option of pregnancy termination.
Shira, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Scott Coe, that is the overriding issue, that it seems that in other forms of screening, you might find that you have a certain disease that therefore you have treatment options. But here, there's no treatment option.
That's correct. During utero, there's nothing we could do about Down syndrome, but couples decide to get this information for one of three reasons. One, if they get the information, they will make a decision to terminate. If they get the information, they'll make the decision to continue. Or a third option is they might continue the pregnancy and offer the child up for adoption. Currently, there is a 6-month waiting list of Americans waiting to adopt a child with Down syndrome. So clearly, there's lots of options. And like this caller says, you really need to know the information so you know what you're making a decision about.
Professor Mariner, do you see, do people see that they have all these options, or is in reality when they're in the doctor's office and they're given this news about Down syndrome, is it more of what the caller was saying in that it's either terminate or not?
Well, the primary reason to get the test in the first place would be, I think, to decide perhaps not to continue the pregnancy. And this can apply in the future when tests expand beyond their current focus on Down syndrome. I mean, as the cost of DNA sequencing is declining, it's probably going to be possible to screen for many different genetic variations all at once in the future. And since we all have a lot of genetic variations, people could be faced with decisions about lots of different kinds of traits for their children.
So how is that not eugenics then?
Well, it certainly raises the specter of eugenics, although if it's private decision-making, it may be private eugenics. If it's public decision-making, it may be public eugenics.
Let's take another call in here. Scott is calling from Holden. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thank you. Very interesting topic. One of the things that occurs to me is that, you know, the age of first pregnancy seems to be increasing in industrial nations. Certainly in this country, women are having babies older. And the risks of a child being born with Down syndrome increase as the mother is older at the beginning of that pregnancy. This technology would seem to make it possible for aging women, aging couples, to make a decision to say, perhaps try a pregnancy, see whether or not it has Downs, and then, of course, there is that decision as to whether or not to terminate it. There are moral consequences, but there are also consequences for everybody in terms of rising health care costs, you know, how we're going to structure this. It seems there's a lot of potential outcomes here.
Scott, thanks so much for your call. Let's get another one in here. Glenn is calling from Hampton, New Hampshire. Welcome to Radio Boston, Glenn.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to say that I'm in favor of the test. My wife is 35 and I'm 36, so her, I guess the likelihood of us having a child with Downs was going to be a lot higher. So we did go ahead with the amnio test, and at the time we were really concerned that that could have a problem with causing the fetus to have an accident earlier. So I just look forward to a test like this, not to necessarily make a decision earlier to terminate, but to be able to prepare ourselves for something like that. And during that time when my wife was pregnant, we would be able to use that time to study up and find a lot of research out there to take care of our baby once the baby was born.
Glenn, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Brian Scott Coe, that's the whole other half of this question. Obviously, there's major downsides, which we've been looking at, but that early detection or early diagnosis allows people to become prepared. But my question, to add on to what the callers are saying, is do we have the supports in place to help this whole new swath of people who might have, you know, looking to a future where their baby does have Down syndrome?
That's right. Certainly there's a growing number of people who want the information to become prepared. We're fortunate in Massachusetts to have Maureen Gallagher and the Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress to provide that information. But the majority of America does not have a local Down syndrome nonprofit organization or necessarily local physician groups that are knowledgeable about life with the condition. So certainly resources need to be available, and I know both of the national Down syndrome organizations are trying to address that.
So Maureen Gallagher, what do those people do then if they right now they could be given that list of that piece of paper that says your fetus has this, this, not this, and not this, and then they're out on the street with no help?
Well, we welcome people to call the Mass Down Syndrome Congress, and we have a service first call that's available 24/7 to talk to another family. Overnight, we will send them a package of information with all the up-to-date information about what life is like living with Down syndrome. And if they should choose, we can also match them up with a family. On a national level, the National Down Syndrome Society also has a website, and they also have resources for anybody in the country who would like more information about Down syndrome. So we do have both local and national resources. However, as Brian mentioned, not everybody has the one-to-one support like we have here in Massachusetts.
Dr. Scott Coe, you said that this test could be in doctor's offices by next year. I presume that it has to go through some regulatory procedures before that happens. Is that correct?
That is the big question. And does the government have to intervene? And back in July of last year, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, sent a letter to the major companies that are building this test saying, wait a minute, is this a medical device that needs regulation? Now, it's going through the process right now, and the letters are kind of warning letters, but it's an open question right now. Does the government, does the FDA have the right to regulate these tests, or can the companies go right to the doctor's office to begin offering
them? It's still an open question.
Yes.
Professor Wendy Mariner, you know, what's underlying so much of this conversation is this fact that now we as a society are fast approaching the day and age. Maybe we're in it right now where, you know, we now have to decide what forms of genetic variation are acceptable and what forms are not acceptable. Like, how is it that we're supposed to manage this whole new world of questions when it comes to who we want or what we want to be as a society?
Well, we have traditionally left that up to individuals and the families. We don't like to get into regulating who's entitled to survive and who isn't, but that does leave it to private decision-making. And that private decision-making may be increasingly influenced by commercial companies who are developing these tests, as they have with other kinds of genetic testing over websites and the like. The FDA regulatory authority is an important question, at least with respect to ensuring the accuracy of the test, if not necessarily its availability. So the one place that might be important is consumer protection regulations like the Federal Trade Commission, with ensuring that at least there be fair and non-misleading advertising. This might not just be available in doctor's offices. It might be available commercially apart from physicians.
Hmm. Dr. Scott Coe, your thought?
One day soon, expectant parents may get information that says your fetus has a 20% chance of being gay and a 60% chance of developing breast cancer. What do you want to do? Those questions are coming soon.
Wow. Well, that's Dr. Brian Scott Coe. He's a specialist in the Down syndrome program at Children's Hospital in Boston. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Megan.
And Maureen Gallagher, executive director of the Massachusetts Down Syndrome Congress, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you very much.
Wendy Mariner, professor of health law at the Boston University School of Public Health. Pleasure to have you on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
And coming up after a short break, renovating Boston's Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. Despite the critics, the beautiful 15th century Venetian-style palace is getting a decidedly modern addition. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.